passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Here we go with Hot Sheet, Scotty Braun, JJ Cooper, and Ben Badler with you. JJ and Ben coming from Baseball America. Please get a subscription to BA, support everything that they do. And also, if you're listening to this in podcast form, please rate and review the podcast page for Hot Sheet. We're bringing you a little bonus content this week. JJ, I'm excited about this. We're going to have another Hot Sheet show on Friday. We'll do it live 3 o'clock Eastern time. That's Friday, May 24th. It is a College World Series preview show. JJ will be on, myself, some other BA experts, of course. You can listen to the pod afterward. But JJ, tis the season, right?
It is, and we're looking forward to it. We got NCAA tournament selection next Monday. We're going to obviously look at that, but we're also going to look at who are the teams that are the teams to beat. Who are the teams we expect to make it to Omaha? Who do we think is going to win in Omaha? And also, who are the players that, if you're kind of checking in now, it's like, okay, this is the time of year that I get into college baseball. We're going to get you all ready so you will know everything you need to know to be ready for the college baseball postseason.
Yeah, the one other note I'll say for maybe fans that aren't following college baseball and the results that closely, and they're more looking for who's next in the show, Cleveland Guardians fans, I'll throw out there for example. You have the number one pick coming up, okay? If you want to see who's out there, this is a good show to watch and to listen to on Friday. And then everyone else in the top 10, if your team was going through it last year, you ended up in the lottery and you want to see who could potentially be, you know, there's not a Paul Skeens, but the next Paul Skeens for you, then listen to the show on Friday. Okay. There's not a Skeens.
Hagen Smith is going to try.
Yes, he will try. Okay. Good luck if he gets it to the show in under a year and has 6 no-hit innings and 11 punch-outs in his second start against the same team. But I digress. All right, let's get to first move. Meep, meep. All right, Ben Badler, take center stage here. I want to go big picture first on where we are as a sport with the international signing system, how it's set up, where there is corruption, if that's being handled, and what's the solution. And answer it all for us and solve the world's problems in a few minutes. Can you do it?
Yeah, easy question. Thanks, Scott. One of the big thing right now with the international signing system is how early players are coming to agreements to sign with teams, right? So the signing period every year internationally starts January 15th and runs through the end of the year, but almost all of the signings happen right away on January 15th or shortly thereafter they'll sign. That's because these teams have agreements with players lined up years in advance. And that's not necessarily something that's entirely new. I wrote a story 10 years ago about how teams were really starting to heavily scout players when they were 14 years old and reaching agreements to commit players to sign even the year before they were eligible to sign. I mean, it was so long ago that one of the players in that story was a 15-year-old named Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I mean, he's now 2 years away from being a major league free agent. That's how long ago it was, but it's really only accelerated since then to the point where right now teams already have commitments in place to sign players, not just for January 15th, 2025 next year, but 2026, 2027, starting to come to deals with players for 2028. So we're talking about, scouting players when they're 12 years old and reaching commitments when they're, typically 13 or 14 years old, at least for the big money guys in the class. So it's really not great for pretty much anybody, I would say. It's not good for the teams. I don't think a lot of scouts want their jobs to depend on trying to predict the future of players in the when they're 13 years old. I mean, the signing age being, you know, 16 or, you know, 16, 17, it's already hard enough. I mean, it's hard enough in the draft with college players even. So trying to do it at 13 is no easy task. So it's not great for teams to be making these multi-million dollar decisions on players that young. And it's not good for the players to really have to be or trying to be ready to sign when they're that young either. The trainers who have the players in their programs and the academies throughout Latin America, especially, you know, Dominican Republic and Venezuela, you know, they need time to get these players ready to be trained and ready to sign. So they have to get the players ready even younger than that. So a lot of them don't really like the system. So there's something that needs to be done to be able to try to slow things down, because right now the way the system is working, I think, is broken and doesn't really benefit either the clubs or the players or the trainers who are developing these players either.
But the thing that stands out to me on this is that what we have right now is a system where the incentives, unfortunately, are such that everyone's kind of, I guess, feels the need, Ben, to kind of head down that direction. It's, you may talk to teams who are like, hey, we don't want to be scouting 12 and 13 year olds. We don't want to be coming to agreements with 13 and 14 year olds. But I would also say that no one is like, hey, we're going to unilaterally disarm from that. They're kind of, it seems like that, is it fair to say that everyone views this as long as everyone else is doing it and as long as MLB is not doing anything to change this, to crack down on these agreements that are a year, 2 years, 3 years in advance, everyone kind of ends up feeling like that they have to do this in some ways, whether they do or not. That's kind of the impetus is kind of led this way. This steadily getting younger and younger and younger is that's where the advantage is, right?
Yeah, I mean, MLB is the one that is in charge of, you know, making rules, implementing rules, and teams left to their own devices are going to say, okay, if MLB is saying, you know, either implying or just saying outright, yeah, like, you know, it's fine, go ahead. There's basically no signing age or no unofficial signing age, at least. Then, yeah, go ahead. The teams are going to be competitive, especially scouts are extremely competitive. Everybody wants to, you know, beat everybody else to the punch, you know, be in on a player before their competition. So there's, you know, that aspect to it. I think some teams are more aggressive than others. Other teams say, yeah, like we're not confident enough in our ability to predict the future of a 13-year-old player, at least not make a, you know, million or multi-million dollar decision on a player at that point. But yeah, I mean, every club is coming to agreements to, you know, commit these players at least a year or more in advance of these signings.
And JJ, the way I'm looking at it from the outside is that the league has given up for now, number one. And number two, they have a very, very clear direction where they want this to go. They are 100% mind made up that they want an international draft. And that's for a variety of reasons. I can see where it would help in some ways, but it also would help the structure of what they're looking for as a league. Drafts for everything, salary caps for everything, right? It becomes a whole labor battle. And there's no better way also than to look at who they've hired to be part of the league's advisor committee, right? It's Pujols, it's Nelson Cruz. Players that have major influence internationally are joining the league to be a voice. And it's pretty obvious that one of the, you know, major factors of what they'll contribute to the league is to be able to try and get them to the point that they want to get to, which is an international draft. So I say all that with two questions. One, is there actually a solution besides the international draft? Because that's something that, you know, the union is holding back and not giving in on, at least at the moment. So I'll start there. Is there any solution besides that that makes sense? And then obviously, Ben, you can follow JJ here.
No, go ahead, Ben. You start off. You're the expert.
Yeah, it's not like an easy, like immediate solution. And one of the reasons, because like you said, MLB has just been so hands-off for years and let it get to a point where you already have commitments in place for 25, 26, 27, 28. So I don't think you can just come in overnight and say, okay, all of these, you know, agreements for 2025, those are off. But I think if they went in and said, hey, starting with the class of, I don't know, say, if you want to say 2027, where we don't even have a CBA yet, which is three CBAs away, and say, hey, all of those agreements are off. Or if, say, you want to put it to 2028, if you want to go even further out where there's fewer deals in place right now, there's all of those agreements are off and nobody's allowed to, reach agreements to sign a player that young. And those players are still like 12 and 13 years old right now, and actually implement, penalties for saying, hey, if you now do violate these rules, then there's going to be, significant penalties for, any scouts involved, the GM, fines up to the ownership level, loss of, draft picks, internet, you can come up with all sorts of harsh penalties that would incentivize people to then follow those rules. But I think, like you said, MLB, really their plan A is to go for an international draft. And right now they don't seem to have any backup plans.
The thing that kind of jumps out with this to me is, as you said, there are pluses and minuses to an international draft, but that is something that is established has to be collectively bargained. And so far it hasn't been part of multiple CBAs now. And the thing that jumps out on all of this, kind of going to what Ben said, is it can't be plan A without a plan B, because plan B here, what Ben just laid out, like we've seen examples of this on the international market before. When we had, there was a time where you saw a lot of kind of bonus circumvention with package deals, where you would a team would sign player A from a team for below market deal, and then also sign that trainer's players B, C, and D, at above market deals. And that was kind of a way of circumventing some of the bonus regulations. And so what did MLB do? They cracked down on it. And by doing so, I'm not saying it completely eliminated it, but it did reduce it. And so there's nothing preventing a pretty straightforward rule saying, like, hey, that the contact period, you can't scout these players before X days, X year, a year before their signing day or whatever it is. And then say, and going beyond that, there can't be any conversations until this date or whatever. It's kind of what we've seen in some ways, and Ben, you've made a good point on this, and we've talked about this before, about when you look at it on the recruiting side in the U.S., we've seen on the college baseball recruiting side that it was getting to eighth and ninth graders. And I'll kind of kick it back to you because you've kind of followed this closer than I have. But what did the NCAA do?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a ton of parallels to college baseball recruiting, and it's probably not a great sign if you're MLB that, like, the NCAA is beating you to the punch in terms of putting in good regulations, because we had, eighth graders, 13-year-olds committing to, Division I programs, and MLB, or excuse me, then the NCAA put in a rule that said, hey, you can't talk to any college coaches. Now, college coaches, for the most part, can't talk to players until August 1 going to their junior year, which has really curtailed these super early college commitments. So, there's definitely a lot of parallels to it, I think.
Now let's focus on some individuals, Ben. So let's get to the top list of 2025 international amateur class prospects. So you want to run through a few for us here. I'll start. Elian Pena, a shortstop. What do you have for us?
Yeah, it's the bat and the power. He looks like he's going to be the top paid player in this year's class. He'll probably sign for around $5 million or so. A really polished offensive player. It's a really sweet swing from the left side. It's compact. It's adjustable. It's a lot of contact in games. It's a good approach. And then there's big bat speed and power too. Shortstop right now, we'll see if he stays there. You can see, like, in the video, it's kind of a thicker lower half. I think a lot of scouts expect him to move to shortstop, but I don't know. I would have said the same thing about Aiden Miller when the Phillies drafted him last year. He's playing a surprisingly good shortstop this year. Would have thought the same thing about Bo Bichette the summer going into his senior year of high school, and he's turned into a major league shortstop right now. So you never know, but I think he's got a chance to be a middle of the lineup type guy. Obviously, a long, long ways away. But if everything clicks, it's a really exciting hit power combination.
I like it. Okay, next up, we have a name that everyone should know, at least last name wise, because he is a rising prospect in the San Diego Padres system, Ethan Salas. There are other Salas family members that have massive potential. So what do you know about Andrew Salas?
Yeah, Andrew Salas, going to sign with the Marlins on January 15th next year. You said older brother Ethan signed with the Padres, 7-figure bonus, number one international prospect last year. Had another brother, Jose Salas, currently with the Twins, also signed previously a 7-figure deal with the Marlins. So I was down there in the DR watching him play. Talked to the dad. He said, that's the last one. But I said, let me know if any more are coming. But just a very smooth, polished, fundamentally sound player, switch hitter, really good swing from the left side, as a knack for backspinning the ball, especially the opposite way. A lot of kids that age get like super pull heavy. He's comfortable using the whole field, has a good approach, knows the strike zone. Not quite as like quick twitch, super explosive as you might see some other players at the very top of the class, but very smooth, under control, instinctive player. Should end up being one of the, the top paid players in this class.
Let me ask you about two more. I'm going to struggle here on the name, but Joshua Gonzalez.
Yeah. Joshua Gonzalez. You talk about super quick twitch, explosive players. I think you just need to watch him take a couple ground balls. I mean, you see the way he's moving his feet here, the arm speed. He's, well above average runner, just explosiveness to everything he does. Looks like a lock to stay at shortstop, can run, huge arm strength, really fast hands. You can see here, not that big. He's probably 5'10", but because he has so much bat speed, he's able to generate pretty impressive power, especially for his size. You can see he's still really lean, athletic, wiry, more room to get stronger. So premium tools, premium position, one of the more exciting up-the-middle athletes this year.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. That's why I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America. It allows me to do everything on one website. I get quality candidates. I can schedule them. I can interview them. I can screen them. I can send messages to them, all within Indeed. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When it comes to ensuring your company has top-notch security practices, things can get complicated fast. Vanta automates compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, GDPR, and more, saving you time and money. With Vanta, you can unify your security program management with a built-in risk register and reporting, and proactively manage security reviews with AI-powered security questionnaires. Over 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora use Vanta to build trust and prove security in real time. Learn more at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go.
So, okay, Ben, I just want to ask you to kind of, if there are some people following this who aren't as following January 15th as closely, and they're thinking, okay, well, yeah, these are names, but we're not going to hear about them again till 2030, 2032. you know, Salas is a good example of this. Some of these guys take a long time, but especially in the new system, especially with the fact that players now sign January 15th and go to the DSL that year rather than July 2nd and they go to the DSL the year after that, it's a little bit of a faster pace of when these guys make it to the States and make an impact, isn't it, than it used to be?
I mean, yeah, Jackson Churio signed January 15th, 2021. You know, a little less than 3 years later, he's signing what, the $80 million, whatever it is, contract extension. So, yeah, I mean, those are the abnormalities, right? But we are seeing a lot of, look, I mean, you look up and down our top 100 prospects list right now, it's a lot of guys who signed for big money. They're not just on there because they signed for big money. They've signed for big money and they've come through and, you know, things have clicked for them. Now, there's still players like Junior Caminero, right, who signed with the Guardians for like $70,000 and has turned into one of the best prospects in baseball, also at a very young age. I think he's still, what, 20, 21 years old right now. And then, the, you know, the pitching, I think, can pop at, you know, all sorts of different times. But, yeah, we're seeing especially a lot of the big bonus guys come through and make an impact still at a pretty quick pace.
Let's mix in a fan question. Obviously, we'll do that throughout all of the shows here on Hot Sheet on a weekly basis. So let us know when you have something for us, especially if it's on brand on the topic that we're on. Jay, what do you think of Augustin Ramirez, Ben?
I'm very excited about what he's done at the plate this year. Definitely was not expecting him to have the year that he's put together right now. So I think offensively, a lot of positive signs, contact and impact. I think defensively, where he plays is still a pretty big question mark with him. I think there's a lot of risk. He may end up maybe at like a first base DH type, but everything offensively has looked really good this year.
There you go. I like it. Keep those questions coming. Let's get to Helium Spot. All right, we've got the minor league player of the year watch list running right now. So, JJ, there are some names that look quite familiar that we talk about all the time. Want to run through some of what that list looks like, at least at the moment in your mind?
Sure. By the way, Augustin Ramirez is, I would say, a long shot, but he's a guy who could have been on this list today, having such a, you know, the year he's having at Double A Somerset, you know, and a guy for who is a catcher for now. At least a guy doing that kind of offense with that production does stand out. But the top of the list right now, I think we're here. We are 45 games in the AAA season, 39 games into AA and Class A. So a little ways into the season now, Carson Williams, the Rays shortstop, has been exceptional at AA Montgomery. This is one of the best defenders in the minors, you know, at shortstop. And then this year he's gone out and just had a monster year offensively so far. And I do think that as great as that year has been, it's hard to fully understand how good it's been, because one of the things we just have to deal with in the minors now is it's kind of two different systems. We have AAA, which has the major league ball, and then on top of that has the ABS system and all that. And so you see what I would describe as kind of normal batting average on base slugging percentages compared to the big leagues in AAA. And then you go to like the Southern League where Williams is playing, and the league batting average is under 230. The league slugging percentage is in the mid 300s. So when a guy like Carson Williams is going out there, his slugging percentage looks great. It's in the 600s, but it's actually 300 points better than the league average, which means that as great as his season has been, it's easy to undersell just how impressive he's been. He's a guy who stands out. But the other one that I feel like we talk about on this show every single week is Nationals outfielder James Wood, who, again, is having kind of the season that you dreamed of, you'd hoped that he would have this year. James Wood has been exceptional at AAA so far. He's really cut down on the swing and miss. He's improved the strikeout rate. The power's there. There's the ability to hit for average. There's a little bit of everything. And, yes, we are all waiting for the James Wood call-up notification, but I am not getting involved in any other way with Drake or Kendrick. Kendrick,
yeah, we're looking at a meme right now. If you're listening to the pod, that's why JJ dropped that. But yeah, Ben, I was just going to follow and say the reason that he's on this list and that we bring him up every week is because he should be in the big leagues right now for a team that's most likely not contending for a playoff spot this year, although they keep making the progress that you like to see. Talking about the Washington Nationals, they've got a decent list of veterans that, you know, Edwy Rosario was what, player of the week a couple weeks ago. Jesse Winker's been okay. I mean, he's obviously more of a DH at this point in his career. I think we know what Victor Robles is at this point, and also he's going to be a free agent. Lane Thomas is on the IL right now. When you look at their outfield, you're like, huh? This guy looks like the best player potentially in the minor leagues right now, and he's not up for a team that is rebuilding. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I have a feeling we're going to be having a show pretty soon, probably maybe next month, where we're talking about James Wood going up to the big leagues. I don't think he has a ton left to work on right now in AAA coming into the year. I totally understand why they sent him there, because he did have a higher swing and miss rate at AA. I mean, he's 6'7". It's super long limbs. He's going to have length to the swing pretty much all the time. So that's something that he needed to work on. But right now, he's done a great job, like JJ said, of cutting down on the swing and miss. It's top of the scale, raw power, exit velocity numbers. Early on in the season, we were seeing maybe not that translating into big home runs, where he was still finding that right balance of contact and when to drive the ball for some bigger loft and impact. So he's hitting some more balls on the ground. But now it seems like he's kind of found that happy medium of both, where it looks like he's somebody who could, you know, have some seasons where he's hitting 40 plus, maybe even 50 plus home runs in a peak year.
Yeah. One more thing, JJ. I mean, I think at one point, you know, at bats against lefties was brought up. A big discussion this year is about the talent differential and the minors versus the majors and how it's growing. Is he really going to get that much better against minor league left-handed pitching? Like, is there elite left-handed pitching that he's facing regularly? Or is the best way to figure that out in the big leagues when your team's not a playoff contender?
I can argue it both ways, because at the same time, as you said, this is not a team that is in any way, you know, again, they're having a better start season than we expected. Still no one thinks they're a World Series contender. And there's a kind of a Rays component, I feel like, with this, which is the Rays is someone who we have AAA Durham right down the road from us. The Rays always are kind of slow walk their prospects. And the thing that it does do for them in a year where we've seen a lot of these guys hit the big leagues and struggle right away. Yes, you're not going to get the challenges. You're not going to get that ability to face major league quality lefties in AAA, but an extra 100 PAs, 150 PAs does seem to sometimes kind of help you ease that transition. And we've seen a lot of guys this year. We mentioned Churio. We've seen Colt Keith has heated up lately, but Colt Keith kind of was maybe the worst hitter in the major leagues in the first month of the season. There's a lot of these kind of young guys who do struggle even after having very solid minor league careers. So that gap between AAA and big leagues seems like a chasm right now. And so the argument can be, let's get him to the big league so he can learn there. Or the other argument you can say is you know what? An extra 150 PAs isn't going to hurt anything because we're not winning anything this year.
Okay, fair. So to put a cap on the player of the year discussion, can we get a pitcher on that list or two or three? I know it's not easy, but what do you think?
We set up a pitcher. We actually do a pitcher of the year now because a couple of years ago, we realized that the way the trends are going, it used to be that you would see the best minor league pitchers throw, best prospect pitchers throw 140, 150 innings. You can easily give a Jeremy Hellickson, a Blake Snell minor league player of the year in a year where they're getting to those kind of numbers in those kind of innings. But now we're in a situation where a lot of times we're seeing the best pitching prospects shut down after 100 innings, 105. They're not ERA qualifiers officially, things like that, where it's become tougher. But that said, we have seen some really good pitching prospects have really good starts to the season. Robbie Snelling was our pitcher of the year last year. I'd say so far, Jonah Tong just got promoted. Quinn Matthews just got promoted. Jaden Hamm, kind of a guy who's come a long ways very quickly for the Tigers. Those are all guys who are having great starts to the season. I should probably mention, I don't think you will win our pitcher of the year, but Tugboat Wilkinson, who just got promoted, who has been piling up strikeouts at a furious rate in Class A so far as well. Those are some pitchers having really great starts to the season. At the same time, again, if they're going about 90, 100, 110 innings, it's going to be hard for those to edge the Carson Williams, the James Woods, or the guys like that who stick around the minors the whole year who are contending for Player of the Year.
I like it. Okay, let's get one more fan question in here before we say bye for this week. Andrew asked us a question last week, and we're people of our word. We said we would bring it to next week because we ran out of time. So Andrew's question was nice and simple, but maybe not. What can the Angels do to get better at developing minor league ball players? JJ, you want to start?
Yeah. One thing is I would say be a little more patient with them. To give Nolan Schanuel an example of this, which I give Nolan Schanuel all kind of credit in that he hasn't fallen on his face, you know, being pushed extremely quickly to the major leagues. But at the same time, kind of the inverse of that James Wood conversation we just had, I don't know how helpful it is for the Angels or for Nolan Schanuel for him to be kind of a below average offensive first baseman and who's really doesn't hit for a whole lot of, I know he's got homers, but doesn't hit the ball particularly hard and kind of just keep doing this. Like, I mean, again, maybe it'll click at some point. Maybe he gets another 200, 300, 400 major league plate appearances and he finds another gear. But if I want to be, you know, kind of mercenary about this, you're burning service time while he's doing that. And if you figure that out in the minors, for the Angels, you would be seeing a better Nolan Schanuel when he comes back up. And maybe for Nolan Schanuel, you would be a better big leaguer when you come back up. Things like that, where I feel like that there's just been kind of this rush to push guys up, sometimes when they're not ready, sometimes kind of into pretty minor roles where there needs to be a little bit more patience. And I would say more than anything, I think this is ownership driven more than anything, kind of a willingness, like what we saw with Ohtani last year, a willingness to accept, even though you have a Mike Trout, who's hurt right now, even though you had an Ohtani, that at some point you have to look longer term if you're going to build something here. And it does feel like that most all these moves, and again, I want to hear what you think too, but most all these moves have been, you know, just short-term focused over and over and over.
Yeah, you would think for a team that has had as little success as they have at the major league level that they would be trading away more players and getting more prospects in return for other clubs. And that hasn't been the case. In fact, it's been kind of the opposite where they've shipped out players. And I think a lot of it is ownership driven, where I think part of it is just being able to, or being willing to dedicate more resources to scouting and player development. I mean, you mentioned on the draft side, I think internationally, they have signed some good players recently. Obviously Edgar Caro, the catcher, they traded to the White Sox, who's in our top 100, Nelson Rada, a perfect example of being patient, really good prospect, but why is he in Double A right now as an 18-year-old when he's clearly over his head, doesn't belong there? You know, they're a team, they have probably one of the lower end facilities right now in the Dominican Republic, and that's part of the reason why they can't have two DSL teams to compete with other clubs that mostly have two DSL teams, so they have fewer roster spots. So when you see the Astros, you know, signing guys like Framber Valdez or Christian Javier or Keating, all these players for a low bonus signings who turn into really good players down the road, you just have fewer opportunities to hit on those types of players, especially pitchers, when you're limiting your scouts to fewer roster spots to be able to have for these players.
Two more quick replies here on fan questions. Here's one from Andrew. I'll give this one to JJ, and then the next one's an international question for Ben. Speaking of Keith, any Tigers up and coming prospect? Well, there's at least one that I'm hoping is up in the show soon, JJ. I know there's a quote logjam, but I think they're going to make space for Jackson Job at some point this season.
Got to get back on the mound. He's been slowed by a hamstring injury, but it's not a major injury. Shouldn't cause a long-term problem, but got to get off the IL. I think he hadn't pitched since May 1st is last time, I think. But he's obviously not far away. Ty Madden in AAA is kind of more of a mid-to-back-low rotation starter, but not that far away. I know Ben's a big Kevin McGonigal fan. I kind of am too. And then Jaden Hamm, who we mentioned, is a guy who has really kind of been a pop-up prospect for them, really kind of taking a step forward. We haven't even mentioned Max Clark. We've got guys like Justin Henry Malloy. It's the best the Tigers farm system has been in a very long time. That being said, if you said, give me your top 10 Tigers position players that they've produced in the 21st century, I would run out of names before I got to 10. So it's something where there was room for improvement.
Yes, well said. And then lastly, Jason, with this question for Ben, are the A's linked to signing any of the top international players in January? He's hoping for better returns from some of the prior signings.
Yeah, they're going to be they're going to be active this year. I'll give you a name. So Aiden Johnson, he's from the Bahamas. The Bahamas is really an up and coming baseball country. We're seeing more and more prospects signing from there, and I think a lot of the top prospects from the Bahamas typically have been, you know, super athletic guys who can really run or are really explosive, maybe a little bit more raw in terms of the hitting ability, just because they're not facing the same level of competition that their peer group is from, you know, from Venezuela or from the Dominican Republic. But with Johnson, he actually has it seems like he has a pretty advanced approach at the plate. He's a third baseman. I think it's a pretty advanced hitter, one of the more advanced hitters we've seen coming out of the Bahamas, especially in recent years. So he seems like a big name for them on January 15th.
Good questions from everyone. Keep them coming. Also, a reminder that we have a special hot sheet show on Friday, 3 o'clock Eastern. We'll preview the College World Series selections. Like and subscribe this podcast, please, if you're listening right now. And also, please rate and review as well. Thanks for listening or watching or both. Hot Sheet on Baseball America's YouTube channel. For JJ and Ben, I'm Scott. We will see you on Friday to talk college ball.